1, User Experience. And for this session, we're going to be looking at Chapter 5, Practical Ethics. So, first of all, you might be thinking, why the heck do we care about ethics for user experience? Well, generally, everything you do with users should work within an ethical framework, because you're taking people's time, and in some cases you might be putting them in harm's way, although that's unlikely in a lot of the work that you'll be doing, and that maybe it's part of some safety critical system work. So ethics are typically needed. Certainly in university and governmental organisations, it's pretty much mandatory to have ethics for most stuff that you do. But you need to also think that in commercial setting for research and development specifically, but also when it's out there for people to use, an ethical framework should drive what you're moving, the way you're moving your work forward. Now, one key feature of this is that ethics are good for science. So you'll, with an ethical framework, you'll get other people to look at your ethics, and that involves discussing how you're going to collect the data, how you're going to analyze the data, what it is that you're going to do, and what will that allow you to sort of understand. And having other people thinking about that, having other people who've got maybe more experience than you have looking at it is super valuable, because it means that the science is going to be good. You're not going to do silly work. So the need for ethical approaches sort of became obvious. This became obvious just after the Second World War, whereby there was lots of experimental work done on people who didn't have any choice, prisoners, etc. And that experimental work pretty much came under the Nazi regime. And so at that point, a bunch of conventions were created such that you couldn't do scientific or medical research and development without an ethical framework which protected the rights of the at that point subjects. Now, this is not to say that nothing happened before that time, nothing bad happened before that time, because it absolutely did. The history is full of typically privileged white guys going to countries in Africa various other places, South America, etc., Australia, in fact, nowhere I don't think has been excluded, whereby they did things to the indigenous people, which generally should not have been done, which caused lots of harm, just for their own scientific if you like, needs, their own scientific curiosity. Further, there's the idea of people who went to study other peoples from other domains, other areas, other regions, and they just wanted to try to understand what was happening for those people. These were anthropologists, and they would write ethnographies, and in the old days these were called veranda anthropologists, because what they would do is just to go to the local go to the local people, ask them to come up to their veranda, typically of their bungalow, not very nice bungalow, talk to them about stuff, and then write that up as though they'd been embedded with those people, living with those people. And that was eventually seen to be a really bad thing to be doing, because you really don't understand the context in which the work's being done, and it's found to be all but useless. Now, we've changed the term of subjects to participants, so you'll still see a lot of people use subjects because that's how they were originally taught, but actually you should be using participants, because subjects presupposes a power hierarchy whereby they are not participating, but they are subject to you, the experimenter, the UXer. And if you sort of put that implication into people's heads, they'll start to behave more as subjects, and so therefore they'll start to agree with you, and you don't want them to agree with you. You want them to do what they think is right, tell you the answers that they think is right, not the answers they think you want to hear. It's not about wanting to what you want to hear. That'll just, it might seem good at the time, but in the long run it will have a really big detrimental effect on the work. Just make sure then, I think, that you're there to that you use participants. Now, the ethics are to keep us pretty much honest in the way that we do our work, in the way that we ask for participants' participation and their help. That's what's happening. They're helping us, and by hopefully helping us, they'll be helping to some extent themselves in the future after the results of the experimental work becomes more applied, shall we say. Now, we have a number of practical ethical procedures in 5.4 that we need to think about. So, one interesting thing is that interventions are designed solely to enhance the well-being of an individual, patient or client, and that they have a reasonable expectation of success. The purpose of medical or behavioural practice is to provide diagnosis, prevention, treatment or therapy to particular individuals. By contrast, the term research designates and activates design to develop to contribute generalizable knowledge expressed, for example, in theories, principles, statements, and relationships. So what we're trying to make sure is that we have a bunch of ethical guidelines that allow us to do the research, so this will be more generally applied, but that we'll be losing a bunch of individuals who should not be harmed beyond reasonable expectations while doing the study. So certainly in things where medical aspects are involved, and I'm using medicine here because I think that healthcare technologies and computer science are huge at the moment, and you'll probably be, you know, it's highly likely that you, that some of you will be working in these domains. Certainly with healthcare, then When a study starts to find that it's having, say, a positive effect, a drug or an intervention, software intervention, is having a positive effect on an individual or a bunch of participants in a part of the study, then what happens is the control group for that study immediately gets that intervention as well, because it's because the study is stopped, and the intervention is then rolled out to everybody because it would harm people to not have it. Okay, and so that's something that you also need to consider for your work. What is the level of harm? Typically, what we're doing in our UX experiments, as we'll see later on, is doing things called A/B testing. So this is where we give different people different views of different artifacts, different bits of work, and we test whether which one's best. We might test, one might be an old intervention, one might be a new intervention, one might be old work, one might be new work, blah blah blah, but we're testing one against the other. And so as soon as we find that one is better for this one bunch of people, we swap all the people onto that better, it's called an arm, that better arm of the study, because it would be unethical to keep them on the intervention that's having a detrimental effect or not such a good one anyway. So there are a number of potted principles of the ethical framework, and these can be these are expanded in the work, and I'm not going to expand on them particularly in this little podcast snack, if you like. But these are, in brief, competency. So you need to keep up to date, you need to know your limitations, you need to be able to ask for advice if you need it. So you need to be competent such that you're able to run an appropriate study, such that we can be sure that the outcome of that study is the outcome that's intended, and the science that becomes elaborated or uncovered within that study is well found, is actually worth something. It's not just a bad study performed by a person who's not well trained means that you're going to have bad science, and that's going to be a bad outcome. And in the end, for a standard application, it'll be just as bad, because what will happen is that the things that you thought were good and should be encoded and captured in that application will turn out to be junk, and so the application won't get traction. Integrity. It shouldn't bother you what the outcome is. What you're trying to do is particularly focus on which is the best of these, say, multiple applications, multiple interventions, artifacts, whatever it might be that you're looking at. You shouldn't have an axe to grind. Now, this can be sometimes difficult to do. So what we have different ways of doing this work in experimental work, which again we'll get to see later in the unit. But if we have something which is a double-blind trial. A double-blind trial is whereby the person who's created the, say, application and they've created the experimental framework to test it, etc., in the case of UX, isn't the person who's giving the, who's interfacing with participants, who's actually giving the experiment. That is a different person who doesn't know what the outcome, what the intended outcome is, doesn't know which one is better, which one is worse. Okay. Now, we have triple blind trial, whereby we have the same concept. The person who's created the application and wants to know the outcome isn't the person who's giving the experiment, and that person doesn't know what they want. And secondly, that the person who is going to do the statistical analysis or the analysis of the data that comes out of that experiment also doesn't know. And that's because you can make, in some cases, stats mean anything. Okay, the stats can fit lots of different scenarios. So it's a good idea that the data analysis also happens so that that can't be changed or that can't be inadvertently implicitly manipulated. There are plenty of stories going back to Coke, the new version of Coke and the old version of Coke, where this is writ large that we definitely shouldn't be doing this. That people, if experimenters know the outcome, they can easily inadvertently change the minds of the people doing the experiment, who are part of the participants of the experiment. Science, follow the scientific method, follow good scientific method, because that will allow us to conform to good scientific principles, which will allow us to make sure that the actual work is useful and usable by people in the long run. Maximize the benefits and minimize the harms to the people who are your participants. So by respecting your participants, i.e. Make sure you're doing the work that fully takes them into account, you can also maximize the benefits and reduce the and reduce any harms to those participants. Okay, this means that the people who are doing your trial should be people who you can hopefully, who would hopefully be people who will be using your work if and when it gets to be an application. It might never make it, but you should expect that these people are not just some random people who you've pulled from different locations, and that they are never going to, you would never expect them to use this kind of work. So for instance, work in, say, Parkinson's disease, there's no point in having people who don't have Parkinson's disease working on this, because they're never going to have the benefit. Okay, because it's people with Parkinson's disease, you want to be part of what's called your population. You must ensure justice to make sure that the work undertaken will benefit the people, and the results of the research will benefit the people too, and that if it turns out that you can see, as we've said before, some clear benefit in what you're doing, that that benefit rolls out to participants who are maybe in the control group or doing a negative part, a negative arm of the trial. And finally, we move on to the, as well as maintaining trust, we move on to social responsibility, which means that we need to make sure that we are conducting the auditing correctly, make sure that we are keeping people's personal details safe and encrypted so that they can't be used against them, so that the results of the work can't be linked back to an individual that can't be, so it can't be used against them, so that we can't track an individual, so that that can't be used to identify their location and expose them to risk or harm. Those kind of things are really important, especially in a mobile world where you're doing mobile tracking of people. So, in summary, ethics can often be seen as a hurdle to overcome that you just don't really want to do, but actually they help you get eyeballs on your work and allow you to have a really good scientific and research experiment, such that you're able to roll that out and have trust in the results in the future, such that you're not going to screw up. Pretty much, it allows you to stop screwing up, and that means that it's going to be much better in the long run. So even though it might take you a bit of time invested to get ethical approval in the first place, Actually, it's much better in the long run because it means that you're not going to screw up, that your work, all that effort that you've put in, won't be for nothing in the end. I would also recommend that you read the book that's listed in the reading list here called Argonauts of the Western Pacific by Bronislaw Malinowski. So he was a ethnographer around the 1915 time frame, and his work is seen as being pivotal in changing the way that we thought about how we did ethnographies and anthropological work was done, in that he lived with the people of the Western Pacific that he studied. He lived them with them for years. He lived as part of their community. He was adopted into their communities, and so he had a much greater respect for those people, but also a much more astute understanding of the context in which the work was done. Now, this might seem like nothing much, but as we'll see in the next few chapters, it's important for you because if you possibly can, it's good to be embedded within the, say, for instance, if you're building a bespoke piece of software or any piece of software, it's good to be embedded within the community w in which you're building. So typically people who are building applications for a community of people or for a particular job role or particular bunch of people in a job situation are much more likely to be able to build good software, okay, as opposed to bad software. So if you're outside of the context, then it's likely your software won't be so good because you won't have an understanding of the community needs. Whereas if you're in that community, it will be better because the shorthand of that community, as we've discussed before in chapter one, the shorthand of that community will not be lost on you. That you know what people mean, that you know when they're skipping ahead, that there are a load of things that are done, but they just skip ahead because they don't think it's necessary to elaborate it. You will know that by being embedded in the community. Okay, so I think that's where we're up to now, and I shall see you for the next one.